Hello, I'm Jeremy O'Shea, and I am a shop teacher in Souk, BC. I'm currently taking my master's and taking a course called EDCI 572 with Dr. Verena Roberts. That course is development and implementation of the curriculum in digital learning contexts. Today's theme will be stories and perspectives, how to search for and find different stories and perspectives. Today, I will be talking about how can our digital bubble as educators filter the stories we hear and believe? What kind of digital stories expand filter bubbles in our learning context? What types of filter bubbles are influencing our digital project? What are you doing to ensure students are using a wide variety of digital resources? And lastly, I will talk about the tech of the week. So to start us off, I'm going to talk about how can our digital bubble as educators filter the stories we hear and believe. There's many ways. One that comes to mind is that websites often have algorithms. Sites like Google and Facebook note links that you click on and then edit what you see based on those choices. This in turn creates a filter bubble that only shows you things you have proven interested in and pushes all the other things, including different opinions, out. This can be fairly problematic if you're looking for opinions outside of your own biases and interests. Eli Pariser suggests in his TED Talk that we find things that are not only relevant to us, but also uncomfortable and challenging to burst the filter bubble. There's also feedback loops. For example, it would be like receiving the same information repeated and exaggerated. I lean a little more liberally, and I have a lot of liberal friends, and so I am well aware that most of the information I receive from them is likely something I'll be interested in. Because I'm aware of that, I try and keep, I have a couple friends on say Facebook or other websites I use, social media websites, that I keep more conservative friends or even further left-leaning friends on there to just remind me that there's other opinions out there and that there's other points of view that I should focus on. In our reading, Rheingold suggests that we find people whose intelligence and honesty we respect but disagree with on things. I think that's extremely important, as we don't want to just keep saying this, the same thing we've heard over and over again. It's also important to note that search engines and other websites may endorse paying advertisements over other options and information. So if a website pays Google or whatever, they might get a favored search result over something that might be more accurate or more in line with what you're looking for. So it's important to look for those things. One way to kind of avoid that or avoid that problem is to avoid the pay advertisements that often pop up initially at the beginning. The first couple are often paid, and they usually say that. Sometimes they don't, though. But it's also good to search past the first page of results and check what's beyond that and really have a good look through your search results. Not to mention that just doing using proper search engine etiquette, like using quotations and things like that, really do help and narrow down your results to find what you're looking for. Another thing to do is if you are reading an article or something like that that you plan to use, it's Rheingold suggests searching up the author, taking a look, who are they, what's the reliability of their research, are they for the thing they're talking about, are they against it, are they possibly being paid to have their opinion? It's extremely possible. That brings us to our next topic. What kind of digital tools expand filter bubbles in your learning context? It's laid out into that we need to demonstrate research and information literacy as outlined in the digital literacy framework. by finding, organizing, analyzing, evaluating, synthesizing, and using information ethically from a variety of sources and media. It's important that we don't just focus on one source. We have to expand from there. Another suggestion is to use multiple search engines. If you use only the same one, you're likely to get similar results each time. So try different search engines. Oddly enough, if you try them from different computers locations, not signed in under your profile, say if you're using Google or something like that, you might also get different results, less biased by your previous results. It's also important to fact check websites. Use fact checked websites like Snopes.com or factcheck.org or politifact.com or other websites like that. They can be extremely helpful in fact checking articles that may seem biased, and making sure that they are in fact correct. And most importantly, I think this one's a really good one, is using Rheingold's suggestion to triangulate sources and information, kind of like a detective or a journalist, where you need to get at least three accurate sources that you trust to confirm a single piece of information. Now, of course, this does require quite a bit of work on the searcher's part, but it is extremely important and will, most of the time get the accuracy you're looking for. Markham Nolan demonstrates in his TED talk, How to Separate Fact and Fiction Online, how he used human sources and the internet using Google Maps to find that a video that was posted online of bodies being dumped off a bridge in Hama was not accurate and took place in a different location and possibly at a different time. At the time, it was going viral, and he wanted to make sure that it was, in fact, accurate before he reported on it and found that it was not true. And I just thought that was very interesting to see. Next, what type of filter bubbles are influencing my digital project? There's a couple I could think of. One, the apps and tech suggested by my classmates. Now, I'm just getting their suggestions. I need to, of course, try them out and make sure that I like them and I feel they're doing the right thing and that they're appropriate for what I'm doing. There could be other similar apps and tech out there that would be better for what I'm doing, so it's important I research them as I go. It's also important that I scrutinize the readings provided by my professors, not to naysay what my professors are saying, but there's always more than one side to every story, and it's important that I check and make sure that I'm not just getting one side and see that check for multiple sources and perhaps other points of view, compare and contrast a little bit. I also have to keep in mind my own biases and beliefs. Being a little bit more left-leaning, I know that I think differently than some of my friends, and I have to double check that I'm not going too far to offend anyone, especially as a teacher. That can be challenging at times because you don't want to state your opinion as fact, especially when it might be a hotter issue, like not that I'm talking about this in my woodworking classes, but something like abortion or things like that, or whatever. It's important to make sure that I'm basing everything on backupable facts and not just my beliefs and opinions. And lastly, it's important for me to make sure that I'm not being influenced by website algorithms or anything like that, or the things I've previously listed that could just internet biases that could be preventing me from finding different sources and different points of view as well. Next, what are you doing to ensure students are using a wide variety of digital resources? When I work with my students, there's not a ton of scientific research or anything like that. It's not very often in my projects that we're citing information. But when we do, I like to provide them with a place for them to start their search, often with websites like Instructables or other woodworking related websites, or if it's electronics, robotics, other electronics and robotics related websites, to get them started. I do like to get them to try different search engines, not just the one they might use at home or all the time. Try different approaches, to try different searching resources. If it is something more academic, maybe use an academic search engine instead, like oh, what's it called? The Google Scholar, or more official ones like JSTOR and those type of things, if we have access to that type of thing. Rheingold had a conversation in his paper with Google's search anthropologist Dan Russell, who suggests that Wikipedia is a place to start your search. I have personally done that myself, as a place to at least get the basic information. Now I realize that Wikipedia is certainly not a always a reputable source. Certainly, it can be abused. I remember years ago I had a friend who was claiming that Wikipedia was a fine source and that it would be fine. And then his brother asked him to search up a particular topic, and he asked him to scroll to the bottom of the page, and it said down at the bottom of the page that under this topic that my friend was an idiot, which was pretty funny. Yeah, because anyone, a couple minutes later, that was deleted and it went all back to normal. But for a moment, it had misinformation on there, comically. But Wikipedia can be abused for sure, and it's important to double check the sources. But it'll give you sources and references to start with, which is a good place to start for most students, especially in the high school level, who may not have access to other papers and things like that. I also ask that my students provide multiple sources and cite them properly. It's important that they, if they use a website, they tell me which website they used, and use proper citation methods, and that they get me more than one source. Not that they just went to one website and copy and pasted, which I have had students attempt to do, and I made them redo everything because it's not acceptable. I also have students try and find counter narratives and compare and contrast. That especially comes up for things like when we talk about things like global warming or e-waste or things like that, in especially in electronics, a little bit in woodworking as well. And compare and contrast these sources that are pro dealing with global warming and anti dealing with global warming, and really discover who's writing these things and where they come from and why one may be more correct than the other. And now I'll wrap up with the tech of the week. This week I would like to talk about a website called freesound.org. It's a collection of sound effects that could be used for in a podcast, and maybe I'll add some right here just for fun. What's nice about it is that these sound effects are free to grab, and they are Creative Commons, so students can use them if they want to add them to a video, or for Foley effects, or to a podcast if they want to have, I don't know, some silly noises. Maybe they're making an audio drama or something and need footstep noises or something like that. There's lots of options there for sure, and I think it opens up a. It's a good resource for students to have, and honestly, for even what we're doing in this course. I think that wraps up for this week. The outro music that you are now hearing is by Picture of the Floating World, and the song is called Canada. Thank you very much, and have a lovely week.